At the turn of the 20th century, Jack Johnson made history by becoming the first black heavyweight champion of the world. He won by a knockout. It would be Jack Johnson's greatest triumph. It would also set him on course to be destroyed by whites who could not abide a black man defeating a white man publicly and with a smile on his face. Unforgivable Blackness, The Rise and Fall of Jack Johnson, is the latest work from Ken Burns. The first of two parts begins tonight on PBS. Ken Burns came into our studios to talk about the man many call the best heavyweight fighter ever.
There had been, since the end of the 19th century, an unspoken, unwritten gentleman's agreement that no African American could fight for the highest ranks in the heavyweight division. They could fight it for other lesser titles, but they could not fight for the heavyweight title. But Jack Johnson was so determined that, having gone through all other challengers, he went and dogged the champion and followed him literally around the world till in 1908 he defeated Tommy Burns.
I had attained my life's ambition. The little Galveston colored boy had defeated the world's champion boxer, and for the first and only time in history, a black man held one of the greatest honors which exists in the field of sports and athletics.
This extraordinary hue and cry went up, led first by the celebrity journalist Jack London, who was a socialist, but whose sympathies for the working men did not extend to people of color. And he said that we must wipe the golden smile off Jack Johnson's face. They asked and begged the former heavyweight champion, the fearsome Jim Jeffries, to come out of retirement and to meet Jack Johnson in a fight on July 4th, 1910 in Reno, Nevada. And he, Jim Jeffries, would be the great white hope.
Thousands gathered in front of big city newspaper offices, waiting for the telegraph bulletins from Reno to be posted for all to see. Booker T. Washington disapproved of Jack Johnson, but even he had a ticker set up in the assembly room at Tuskegee so that his students could keep track of what was happening in the ring.
He was wonderfully flamboyant.
He was a loose cannon on the deck of racial politics. He was not going to follow the more relatively conservative dictates of Booker T. Washington, which was urging accommodation. In an age when African Americans were being lynched for merely looking at a white woman, he was sleeping with whomever he wanted, dressing to the nines, riding in fast cars. Jack Johnson fought and played in this wonderful subculture called the sporting world. And Randy Roberts, one of Jack Johnson's biographers, saw and understood it really well.
A great word that we have lost is the sport. The sport drank in a certain way. He dressed larger than life. He wore diamond stick pins. He wore wide lapels. They frequented houses of prostitution. And Jack Johnson was the quintessential sport.
When our country cannot beat him in the ring, they go after him for his personal life. And because he was an African American, it was a lightning rod for all sorts of reactions. It's his unforgivable blackness, as W.E.B. Du Bois said, that got him into so much trouble.
So tell us about that. He was accused of transporting women across state lines for illicit purposes.
One of his close girlfriends, a white woman named Belle Schreiber, he had quarreled with, and they had actually had a physical fight.
And he'd beat her up.
And they split up, and then he set her up in business.
In a brothel.
Yes. And the combination of that and other travels was enough to say this constituted a kind of prostitution that he was supporting. And so he was convicted by an all-white jury. The prosecutor at the time said many people believe that Jack Johnson has been persecuted. As an individual, he may have been, but as an example of the evils of mixing white and black, dot, dot, dot. So right there at the trial, it was almost open prima facie evidence of this unconstitutionality of the trial. But he was convicted, he jumped bail, he spent years in exile, fought a fight fight when he was overage and undertrained and lost in the 26th round in 105-degree heat, and it would be 22 years before an African-American would hold that title. And that African-American, Joe Louis, would be the anti-Jack Johnson, determined to prove to the white power structure that he was a good man, whereas Jack Johnson had been this loose cannon.
It might seem that I, who have devoted nearly all the years of my life to boxing, I'm stepping out of my role when I presume to turn my attention to subjects far removed from the stern business of pugilism. But even a boxer must come in contact with life and its many problems. When he has been thrown into all classes of society, when he has felt the stings of life as I have and gloried in the triumphs that were mine, he comes to know many things that are not in the category of sports and boxing.
Most people, I would wager, imagine that Muhammad Ali was certainly the first poet pugilist, that he was an original. In fact, it turns out that Jack Johnson was he was articulate, he was poetic in his writings.
55 years before Muhammad Ali. These two men are intricately intertwined in history and in our imagination because they both rise up and out of the boxing world and symbolize so much more. At a superficial level, they share the same defensive style. That rope-a-dope that Muhammad Ali is so famous for is Jack Johnson's defensive style of boxing. In fact, we've heard that during training sessions, Muhammad Ali's trainers would put up sheets on the walls and project the old films of Jack Johnson fighting. Muhammad Ali had this brash public persona, and I think Muhammad Ali, when his government was after him, by the way, in a decade dedicated to civil rights, he must have taken some courage from the fact that 50 or more years before, another great boxer, having a brash public personality, had suffered so much more at the hands of his own people, at the hands of his own government, and that must have given Muhammad Ali comfort.
Director Ken Burns. We also heard Samuel L. Jackson as the voice of Jack Johnson in the documentary Unforgivable Blackness, The Rise and Fall of Jack Johnson. A video clip is at NPR.org. The real story continues. Along with Ken Burns, Senators John McCain and Ted Kennedy have launched a bipartisan effort to get President Bush to pardon, posthumously, the great fighter. The president certainly knows the story well. As governor of Texas, George W. Bush proclaimed an annual Jack Johnson Day.